You're listening to The God Journey, an ever-expanding conversation with those thinking outside the box of organized religion, with your hosts and fellow travelers, Wayne Jacobson and Brad Cummings.
Well, welcome home, Wayne. Where you been?
Oh, my goodness.
Where haven't you been?
No. Just went one place. It only took 32 hours to get there, and we arrived in the middle of an airplane strike, so that even made it worse getting out to Durban where I needed to go. But I was in South Africa for about 2.5, almost 3 weeks, and just got back on Monday.
Well, welcome home. I just watched Wayne's slideshow. He's got some pretty cool pictures of lions.
And there's some pictures up on the ophoto.com, too. There's links that we'll put on this website, too, but it's linked over from Livestream at the moment.
So what did you end up doing in South Africa?
Oh, my goodness. I spent the first week with a class in Durban, South Africa, with a YWAM school for HIV/AIDS. I do a 1 week bit of a 4 week class. And my week is trying to get people to think relationally instead of religiously in our compassion for the poor and afflicted and people in moments of suffering. And so many times in our religious setups, that's either condescending or contemptuous or condemning. You know, you deserve what you're getting from God kind of thing, instead of how did Jesus, when he was here, with such compassion, move toward people in ways that were... So I help people kind of move from that religious mindset about their own life in God,
right,
and ultimately how we love others, to then how we do that effectively. So it's a big study through the book of Galatians. We bite off a big bit of the cross, and we really take people on a journey of rethinking this whole spiritual life. It's fun.
That's fantastic.
It's 17 hours and only teaching time, but then you're also spending a week in kind of community with these folks. So you actually get to know people really well, and you get a lot of away from classroom kinds of conversations that are incredibly fun. So I did that for a week, and then around that, the first weekend I was there, I spent some time in Pietermaritzburg with some believers that have kind of spilled out of the system in various ways over the last 7-8 years. I had a great time with that. One's a fairly new... person to this journey who was on staff at a fellowship near Durban, actually, and just has kind of left it kind of as God's direction, and so he's in a wonderful place, but kind of new to this journey. I met a brother outside of Durban that came down just to spend an afternoon with me. He and his wife are brand new on this journey, and he talked about how lonely it was. They felt like they'd been seeing some things, and the more they walk in the things God's showing them, he's saying to me, the less fellowship I'm having with people that were important to us. And that aren't so approving of where they've journeyed, but boy, bless their hearts, they've stayed on that with real courage. And he shared one thing with me I thought was meaningful. He was complaining to the Lord one day, or at least conversing about how lonely it seems now, that he used to have more people to fellowship with when he was plugged into the system than he has now. And one of the things that God reminded him of was the 12 spies in the land of Canaan. And he said, now really, if you're going to fellowship, do you want to fellowship with the 10 or the 2? And I think he felt like if he had Joshua and Caleb to fellowship with, that would be worth doing. So.
Well, it's interesting. You look at the life of Jesus, as it's unveiled in the Gospels, you start with all the big crowds, but you don't end up with the big crowds. I mean, it's like this, you know, Jesus' lessons in church growth were backwards.
At least from the way we think of it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he didn't become more and more popular. It's like he brought more and more challenging, getting to the heart of the matter things that were sort of thinning the ranks. I mean, I remember, you know, Peter at one point said, Lord, and it's like he was like, you're not doing this right. And then he's like, well, you know, where are you gonna, you know, if you want to leave too, you can. It's like, well, where are we going to go?
That's why John 6 is so fascinating, I think. From feeding 5,000 people who chased you clear around the Sea of Galilee because they want to know what you're about. And then he starts talking about, eat my flesh, drink my blood. And by the end of John 6, everyone's gone except the 12. And he kind of looks at them and says, are you guys going too? And Peter's great endorsement, where else are we going to go?
Yeah, you've ruined things for us.
You know, I don't think that Jesus has a bent for the small, because we know he doesn't. We know he would, that everyone would be saved and come into his life. But I think what Jesus, I want this to be real, and I want it to be effective. And that doesn't always bring crowds. If times of revival and renewal, the old Finney or Wesley days, I mean, it'd be great if thousands of people were you know, falling on their faces saying, yeah, I want God in his life and reality. And I know it's happening in a lot of places around the world today. A lot more people are beginning to see through just religion as an activity and really wanting to connect with God in a way that makes sense and that is transforming. But yeah, I think you always move from, not maybe not always, but at least in our day, you definitely move from greater crowds to smaller groups when you start thinking in those terms.
I don't know that it's about size or thinning the rank. When you're following Jesus, the more you follow him, the more kind of hard-cutting and to the core he keeps bringing. And it takes great courage to go on this. You know, it's easy to kind of stay with the lemming, the crowd, and it's like, well, I get comfort because there's all these other people with us. But in Jesus loves masses of people, but he seems to deal with each one of us on an individual basis. And so I sort of feel like the way this journey is walked out, each one of us has to walk this journey in many respects alone, hand in hand with the Lord.
And it usually begins that way, I think. Are we willing to follow the Lord just because he calls us to? We used to sing that, though none go with me, still I will follow. But none of us really likes that.
I don't think anyone thought that through when they sang that.
But I do think it is an important bit to the fact that I'm going to follow him alone, whether or not the crowd's going, whether or not I get the approval of people that I want, whose approval I desperately want. I think that's a big piece. It's a story that seems to be all over the world, and I found it often in South Africa. Some people have been in the transition a while, now have lots of relationships and lots of people around them, but so many people in the beginning stages of it, again, that have felt like they were all alone. From Durban, I went up to Ladysmith, and here's a vineyard group that had formed about 15 years ago, and over the last 5 years, God's just asked them to, one step at a time, dismantle that thing. And he said they didn't know of anybody else in the world that was hearing the things that they were hearing.
Yeah,
and they felt all alone and somehow stumbled across LifeStream a year or two ago and wrote me. And so I had to spend a weekend with them. And I'm telling you what, that was just one thrilling experience, seeing where they had landed, how much initiative and among people who now didn't have these structures to find comfort in. They've been living this way for 5 years or so. The kind of initiative, people hearing, sharing things God's doing in them, and taking on this journey not as a once or twice a week kind of event, but actually a way to live in God all day long. In fact, I did an interview with him, and one of the future God journeys, I would love to play it for you, because I think it's just an incredible story of the way God asked them to dismantle these things and why he asked them to do it.
You've been around a handful of different groups of believers that have, in effect, sort of gone through this dismantling process. Is there a predominant fruit that emerges in the lives of the community? I mean, would you be able to name one or two things that you see consistently coming out of that kind of process?
I think it's really moving people from being passive in structures. Everything's provided for me. Or I've got a pastor to tell me what I need to know this week or what I need to learn or what God's saying. To people who are very active spiritually, who are listening to God on their own, who really crave and enjoy relationships with other brothers and sisters, not as a substitute for what they're not finding in God, but as an expression of that life. So they become very active in terms of connecting with brothers and sisters. Some drive miles or hundreds of miles even, or fly even to places to connect with brothers and sisters on this journey. And I think that's pretty common. But among all these, what's interesting, all these groups that I've been in various ways and watching them dismantle, or some have dismantled years ago, all of them did it not knowing anybody else on the planet was hearing something similar. But and the courage it takes to do that, I think, is incredible.
Yeah, there's a ring of genuineness in that, is the fact that it's like, it's not just the new fad that someone's researching and, wow, you know, all the believers are doing this. It's this is what Jesus asked of us.
And I love that a book's not driving this, or some famous speaker or author. It really is the Holy Spirit, which, and nothing, everything needs to be dismantled. I wouldn't even suggest that. But I'm saying people who follow God wherever he asks them to go, even if that means pull out these very comfortable props, at the expense of other people very much disapproving of what you're doing and even judging your spirituality and thinking you're coming up short, and still willing to follow the Lamb wherever he goes. It blesses me like nobody's business. And as difficult as it is, I got a wake-up call toward the end of this trip because I went to the Apartheid Museum in Johannesburg, which if anybody gets near that, this is not just a museum of boring exhibits. This takes you into the experience of apartheid, how it developed, what it was like, and then what this country went through to move from being an apartheid society to a democracy that include representation for everyone. And it's when you've had oppressors over a country for years and decades, and to come out of that without the heart of vengeance but reconciliation. I mean, everyone I met just said Nelson Mandela was just a gift from God to the country because he came out of 27 years of prison not vengeful, but with a heart for reconciliation and a need to build the country and involve everybody, not just his particular race. But when you look, when I went through the Apartheid Museum, and particularly the blacks and even some of the whites who were against apartheid at the very beginning, what they paid, I mean, imprisonment, murdered, homes burned or destroyed, what people paid because they had a passion for the liberation of their people, so to speak, or at least the blacks, if they were white. Man, the price we're paying to walk free of religion just seems like nothing. I mean, yeah, sometimes our family doesn't understand, and sometimes Christians we've walked with thinks we're nuts, but really, we're not paying a huge price. As someone said to me once, you realize if you were writing the things you're writing now 400 years ago, that you would have been killed a long time ago.
It burned at the stake.
I do realize that. Maybe that time's coming. It's not now. I mean, we take a little bit of rejection and disapproval, and people don't get it, and people think we're all burned out and upset and rebellious, and a lot of gossip and false accusations, but that's minor stuff in the whole, you know, continuum of how you can be persecuted. I'm thinking being hit with rocks or burned at the stake. I'm thinking those things are worth 27 years without your family locked in prison. I mean, those things would definitely be
costly.
Worse. Yeah.
What was your wake-up call then? You said you got a wake-up call at the end. Was it that?
At the museum?
That we're just not paying much of a price?
Yeah, as I'm watching people pay the price, it's very real for them. I mean, they're hurting as they've gone through these things. And yet when you get to the end of it and say, in the history of struggles, the price is not so big. It really isn't. And we need to encourage each other with that. I think that's an encouragement to say, it's just a little rejection. I know it can be painful. I remember going through it, and boy, you just feel totally lost. I think religion builds itself on our approval needs. And so people, you know, if we fit in well, people give us all the kudos and the rah-rahs. So I do think religion is built on our need for approval. So breaking that is a big deal. But we're not dying for it, and we're not shedding blood.
No, it's like breaking free from an addiction, because I do think that, you know, much of the whole performance drive in Christianity, especially as it relates to being attached to systems or institutions, it is performing for that approval addiction. Is I want someone to affirm that what I'm doing is valuable, that I'm being a fruitful Christian, and I am, you know, performing well so that I get kudos on, you know, gee, aren't I doing well? And I mean, it's interesting, you know, I wasn't at the museum, but when you look at this whole dynamic, even the rejection of people, I don't look at my journey. I mean, yeah, we had a little bit of a tragic tumult. I mean, it was, everything's been upended. But when I sit here today, you know, kind of 4 years after kind of the bomb explosion of stuff, I don't really feel like there's been much of a price paid. I feel like there's been a freedom that has been gleaned. Because all of a sudden it's like my eyes have been opened to see a panorama that I couldn't see in the microcosm of what I was doing. And so it doesn't, you know, yeah, I don't have the same people around me. I'm not the central attraction in a lot of people's lives. But at the same time, it's like now Jesus is more central as the attraction in my life as opposed to all the things that were surrounding it.
And life is so much more fulfilling. I think there's a real difference between how this journey starts with falling out of that, that we talk about the addiction, detoxing from my addiction to people's approval. The first year or two of this transition is, I think, very, very painful for people. But you talk to many people, just like you said, they're 2, 3, 4, 5 years out. Any regrets?
No.
Nobody has any. This pastor who gave up his job went back into the secular marketplace in Ladysmith and watch this whole body just undergo this transition. And all his colleagues in the community, well known among the pastoral group in that city, and all those people just reject him, and nobody call him and find out what's going on because he didn't fit in anymore. I look at him and say, any regrets now, 5 years out? He goes, are you kidding? This is the best. I mean, this what I'm living now is everything I've ever dreamed. And that's what I hear from people. Very, very difficult in those first few days and months, and maybe even years. And then such freedom, such fulfillment. You would never go back.
Yeah, I mean, people have asked me, and it's like, you know, I bump into folks that heard me preach one time, and, oh, that was so meaningful, and don't you miss that? And it's like, I haven't stopped communicating with people. And when I look at, you know, Jesus wasn't out there giving sermons all the time. Most of the Gospels are conversations that he had. I have conversations that are still just as fruitful and just as powerful that, you know, if I was devoid of relationship and I was somehow cut off, yeah, that'd be painful because, you know, part of who I am as a communicator. But do I miss performing for a religious system? No. I mean, I often say just like wild horses would have to drag me back. Jesus would have to take his finger and once again write on the wall to reassign me to something that I don't think is evil and wrong. It's just he has taken me to a different place.
So that six-figure salary wouldn't drive you back then, huh?
No, it'd be not. Frankly, it'd be nice to have a few more bills paid. It's been a little bit of a journey of trust, but nonetheless, I think what's been so neat is I know in whom I am now trusting as opposed to all the things that I once trusted.
And at the time, we thought we were trusting.
I thought they were him.
Yeah, me too.
There were things about him,
yeah.
But it's only in, I think, it's only in the frame of reference now of being able to look back and just like, wow, I derived my security from so many things that were not just sort of raw, naked, hanging on to Jesus. And now there's a sense of going like, I don't feel like it's gritting my teeth. There's days that I just go like, hey, Lord, you know, where's this train going? And I'm not exactly sure. But there is a sense of just going like, I know finally who's driving. And it's not me. And I feel very comfortable with that.
Let me tell you about Johannesburg and Pretoria a bit. Went up there for the last week, most of the time in Johannesburg. It's a group of about 40, 50, 60 believers. Hard to kind of measure it. I was in different homes with various pockets of believers, none of which attend religious institutions of any kind anymore. They just live as God's people, some in some home groups, others just related. The last Sunday I was there, they did something they periodically do when God puts it on their heart. About 40 or 50 of us, I'm not sure how many, met in this park. We went on about a mile and a half hike just through the bush and came back, and everybody pulled these portable gas walk things out of their cars. I forget what they called them. And they cooked breakfast right there under the trees, and they spent another couple of hours just sharing their journeys together. And they do this periodically. It's just a way that they get together, which was absolutely fabulous. There was even a couple with them who aren't even believers but have said it's more fun spending time with this group than the other group they know.
Really?
So they join them out there, and they go for a walk. They've had some other unbelievers join them. Some have come to faith through it. And they've been doing this for probably, if I remember right, I hate to misspeak this, but I think it's 15, 16 years. They've kind of all felt like God asked them to step out of some of the religious institutions they were in. Some were elders, some were pastors, some were, you know, paid staff, and they've come out of it to live this way. And one night we met in a coffee shop that one of the brothers owns, and we had teaching on the cross there, had some sharing, incredible time, a wonderful group of folks. And then one afternoon I just went up, this was a, kind of a last minute thing, a group from Pretoria had written asking if I'd come up and meet with them. And I tell you, Brad, I walked into this home. I had no idea what I was. I thought, you know, three or four of us were getting together, and it was just going to be a couple hours discussion. I walked into this home, and sitting in this outside veranda overlooking the capital buildings of South Africa, off of this beautiful hill, was a group of, I don't know, 30 to 40 people. They're sitting in chairs. There's a table full of food in the middle, but chairs are all around the outside. And they're sitting with notebooks and Bibles in hand, waiting for me to show up. And I said, what's going on? And they said, 10 years ago, we felt like God asked us to step out of the system we were involved in because it was lifeless to us. And he said, leaving, this one man who was sharing whose home we were in, he said, leaving that system, you know what that's like? He looked at me and he said, it is like crucifying your mother because of the disapproval and rejection. And they really left about 10 years before at various stages. They pulled out an old copy of A Passion for God's Presence, an earlier copy of The Naked Church, and they had read this book 10, 12 years ago and had been part of this process. But he looked at me and he said, we've done this. It's a matter of obedience for us, but we're not yet finding life. And I said, and you keep doing it. And they said, yeah, because we know God's called us to this. We're being obedient to it. But we read some of the things you're writing these days about God's love, and we got to tell you, we know nothing about God's love. Would you tell us how it is that we experience God's love and God's life?
Oh, what a juicy question.
Oh, that was like 30 vacuum cleaners sucking on my head for about 4 hours. It was the most incredible time, and parting with that was, so painful and difficult. I just said, this is the toughest thing in the world, and I'd love to have another week with you. And they said, well, come back sometime and bring Sarah, and we'll do that. So I may go back just to spend some time with those folks. Wonderful, great hearts, great passion, and just kind of a blank slate. Help us figure out the life of this thing. We've done the mechanics, but we're not experiencing the life. Just to admit that is an incredible thing. And to be onward to trying to find the reality of that, I think, is something they have in my prayers for it, and maybe I'll get a chance to go back and help them find that.
These are two different groups, though. I mean, there's the one group that's been doing this for 15-some years, hiking and having the time of their
life. Having great life, yeah.
The other folks out of just sort of raw, confrontive obedience, Jesus tell them to leave a system. What made the difference? Why was one group experiencing a life? I mean, I almost wanted to stop you when you said, we wanted to come out of this so that we could live this life. I think a lot of people do a head tilt at that moment because they're going like, okay, what's that look like? And they don't have an answer to what that looks like. And so because they cannot come up with an answer, they're not exactly sure. I mean, one of the things I've learned is I'm not trying to find out what it looks like. I'm just living my life with my family and the people around us. And I've stopped asking, what's the model? What's the... And there's a settling into the rest of just going like, this is our life. This is Jesus in the midst of our life.
Yeah.
And there is life in that.
Absolutely. But they weren't finding it. I think they still had some of the, even though they were outside of the religious system, maybe they still had kind of religious ways of trying to observe. And they weren't doing a lot of meetings, so it wouldn't be that. And I think the questions had more to do with their personal lives, not so much external trappings, what should we be doing, but how have we missed this? We can be obedient to God, but isn't there something more than that? And when you talk about Father's affection, we have no idea what that means. And the difference may be one group did have some people 15 years ago who came through who really helped them understand how to live in God and how to live in His life. And this other group just kind of came out of something and didn't know what else to do. In fact, they said they'd stopped loaning my book. About half the people in the group had read it, and about half hadn't. He said, we stopped loaning it out to people because it was messing us up, and we didn't know what to do with it. And the other ones were begging for copies, so it was a pretty funny moment. But, my heart goes out to folks like that. I admire the courage to step out of something, and yet something happened in making the next steps to go onward, and I really don't know why that's true. I just always enjoy the moments I'm there if I get to be part of helping them discover that. I just think that'll be a whole lot of fun. So that's how the week ended pretty much with those just 4 hours with them, and then I had to rip myself out of there to go back and hang out with some other folks, and then we had the walk in the morning on Sunday morning, and then that afternoon I flew out to another 29-hour flight or something back to the States. Ah, it's horribly painful, but can't wait to go back. So I'm sure we'll try
like
to get back
said,
there
someday. It's nothing. The price we're paying is nothing.
Yeah, I hear you.
29 hours out of
place. Nobody's throwing rocks at you. Yeah. Okay, I'll keep that in mind, Brad. That's good. But just the whole of that trip, as we dealt with the body life, there's a whole other factors of this, being in townships, looking at the need and all that. But looking at the variety of people, from this brother near Durban, he and his wife just spilling out, looking for direction, feeling very alone. Got other folks that have been out a while, a whole group that made a transition together. It reminded me of something Patty wrote to us, actually, after our last podcast. And Patty wrote and said, I would like to encourage those of you who are going through this transition to not concern themselves too much about where they are going to find relationship with other brothers and sisters. Our Father will provide just what you need when you need it. We really don't need to rush around trying to find the people God wants in our lives. We just need to keep our eyes up open to what He provides. It might not be all you expect or all you think you need, but it will be what's best for you to grow in. And I love, Patty, what you've said in that, because I do see people, as they start to it's very easy to connect with people, at least externally, by going to some kind of event and sitting in a big group of people and watching it all happen in front of you.
It gives you the impression that you're connecting with them.
It does give you the impression, and the hope of it.
Yeah.
And probably, I'm like me, I had some real relationships in there that have survived even my departure from it. So it can even do that to some degree. When people spill out, they do feel all alone, which I think is, as we talked about earlier, it is part of the puzzle. It is part of, will I follow Him if I'm not getting external validation from other people? And I do think that's important to break the hold of religion in our lives. But so embedded in us that to be good Christians, we have to not forsake the assembling of ourselves together, that people immediately say, I've got to find a way to meet and do this with other Christians, or I'm going to be caught out here by the, you know, religion police and be beat to death or something. There seems to be that anxiety, and people do sometimes cave into different movements or events or meetings of even out-of-the-box people that really are just, I've got to find something. And I think what Patty's saying is that desperation is really counterproductive. If you just learn to live in Father's life, that becomes the priority. I'm going to learn to live in Father. And yeah, I'm going to keep my eyes open because I can't wait to connect with brothers and sisters who are on this journey. And then watch what God provides in His season and His way. I think that's so much better way to live this, but it's scary and it means we're out of control.
See, I think you hit it right there. Downshifting where I'm no longer the master of my own destiny. That's huge. I mean, I think for a lot of people, you don't have to be a control freak to be caught in the grips of control. Because, I mean, I think just a lot of times, well, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? And it's like, frankly, I had to come to an end and to the conclusion that there's nothing I can do that's going to make this work, other than to be still and allow a life that is supposed to be in me to start to come forth. And that is just counter to, I think, everything in our culture around us. I mean,
particularly our religious culture.
Especially our religious culture, because it's like, I'm given the formulas, you know, three steps to do this, you know, four important things of that, and it's like we have all these exhortations of things that we're supposed to do. I remember one of the things that the Lord told me is, He said, Brett, I want you right now to just sit still. And I translated that into do nothing. And that's not, they're very different things.
They're
the Lord
different.
Didn't tell me to do nothing.
Absolutely.
He told me to be still. And I just, rest was not something I understood. And it's not, gee, I want to take a nap, or gee, I want to stop working, but a true rest found in who Jesus is, where He starts, where His life starts to be the energy that directs my activity. And that's a very different deal.
It is a change, and I think we've had the idea that if we just get church right, then we'll really have this life in God. That the church life flows into the individual life. But I think the New Testament is really, really clear. It works the other way around. If we don't get discipleship right, if I don't get how I live in Him, I'll have no idea how to live among the body of believers. In fact, if I'm not finding great value and reality in my relationship with Him, I'll just use whatever body life expression I can find as a substitute for not having Him. And that's why I think those things break down. That what comes first, if you're going to do the chicken and egg argument, it really comes, our life in Him is first, and what do I need to know Him? And that's more discipleship kinds of issues than it is body life kinds of issues. But if you have that, like, I can fly halfway around the world and be in South Africa and connect with brothers and sisters on this journey, and you know what? Fellowship is not rocket science. It's not work. It's the easiest thing to do, to sit down with people on this journey and connect at heart levels of openness and honesty, and none of that pretense, none of that posturing. And I think that all begins because we've got to find our life in Him then we can share that life with each other.
I know this is just sort of a teaser because we're gonna we took some suggestions from a guy from Australia, Darren. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Darren. Some great ideas.
We're going to be closing this down and do some shorter segments, just I think because of where people's lives are at. We're going to try to keep this more to 30 minutes as opposed to the long-winded 45 to an hour that we were previously doing.
Come on, dude.
But one of the things that I've just been just stuck in my head is, you know, Paul wrote two-thirds of the New Testament. When he came to a set of folks, he said, you know, I want to know one thing and one thing only, Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And we need to unpack the power and truly understanding what the cross does. I mean, you said you went into South Africa and you spent, you know, 17 hours talking about the cross. I think that is one of the most misunderstood and misappropriated essential understandings for us to understand what His life is about.
Well, let's take a look at it maybe next time we do this. I think Darren's suggestions were valid. We're going to try and aim more toward 30 minutes on these podcasts. And we're also looking for a little bit different variety of music. And we're going to try to beef up maybe some of the quality of sound on some of the downloads. Maybe do a high-speed download and a lower-res download for folks that are overseas, maybe that pay a little more to get their download and take a little more time to do it. So we're going to try some of those things for the next two or three podcasts. And we'd love to have your input on it. Do you like the shorter show? Would you prefer it to be longer? What do you got some ideas for music?
Open to suggestions. We're also open to your contributions. So if you have some talents out there that you'd like to throw into the mix, we're very happy to be on the receiving end of some help.
We would. Just some little mixer music, some things to put in between would be great. And even some original music of folks that have got some gifts that would be worth playing. I mean, I've heard some wonderful music out there.
Great.
But we obviously don't run into copyright problems and get our pants sued off because we're just not making enough money. Doing this the way it is. So.
Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like more information about this webcast or would like to join in the conversation, you can find out more at thegodjourney.com. It's our hope that this webcast will help us all recognize God as He really is in the reality of our own lives.